matter what people say. We got it going on. Who cares about what they think?
You know me, I'm the hottest in the
game. WJMS. This is According to RP.
Turn up the volume, kick back, and get raw with us.
From the latest hip hop beats, to social issues that cripple the black community, all from the perspective of a young, strong black woman.
A strong black woman.
And now your host, Rita.
Welcome back, everyone, for another episode of According to RP on WJMS Radio. It's your girl, Rita Pierre, your host. And as always, I hope you guys had a wonderful, wonderful weekend. So we are pretty much at the end of Black History Month. This is the last Sunday. The month is over. It's a wrap. But I really hope that you guys learned something new. I feel like every year I learn about a new inventor or I learn about a new activist. I always find that I learned something new that I did not know, the year prior with regards to my Black people. And so I love participating in Black History Month just for that reason alone, because although we are Black 365 days a year, all day, every day, I think Black History Month gives us that opportunity to really hone in and to really focus on our culture, our people, and to really just, again, immerse ourselves with the Blackness, right? Again, although I feel like this is something we should really be doing on a daily basis, trying to make sure that we're connected, making sure that we really know our history, we know our roots. But unfortunately, it's not like that. And so Black History Month, though, is the time for us to really get, to get in on it. So I hope that you guys learned something. I hope you guys really enjoyed this Black History Month. We had gotten one extra day, or we got one extra day because it's a leap year. So let's make that day count, people. But in any event, happy Black History Month. And again, I hope the celebrations continue because the month is not over yet. It's just February 23rd. But as we're, wrapping things up, I guess let's try to figure out ways where we can continue, the education process, right? Continue finding different ways to immerse ourselves in our culture and to really absorb the Blackness and really, really stand in who we are as a people. So this week, I have a very special guest by the name of Jeff Lindor. And it's interesting. I've had this radio show for, I guess, it hasn't been 2 years yet. It's been like a little over a year and a half. And I have not had Jeff on this show. And we go back and forth about this all the time, how everybody and their mother's been a guest on my show, and yet he has not been a guest on my show. But either way, today's the day. He's going to be a guest on this show. And we're going to just talk about, Blackness, being a Black entrepreneur in this day and age. Some of the trials and tribulations that come around with that. Some of the stereotypes, that are centered around that. And some of the pressures that I find that a lot of Black people face, especially in this era of entrepreneurship. There's like a big boom. And it's like, at this point, I feel like everybody has a side hustle. Everybody has a business. Everybody has a shea butter company, a candle company. Like, everybody is just trying to do what they have to do. But I find that there are a lot of individuals who are kind of shamed into not being part of this entrepreneurial movement. And I wonder, whether or not that's, that shame and that, that finger pointing or whatever is, I guess, appropriate, right? It's one of those things where it's, not everybody is a business person. Not everybody is an entrepreneur. And so sometimes there are people who, they would rather not waste their life savings on something that they know that they're not good at, nor do they want to be good at. So we're going to talk a little bit about entrepreneurialism and entrepreneurship. I don't know why I'm trying to make this word more complicated than it is or more fancy, but entrepreneurship in the Black community. So you definitely want to make sure that you keep it locked for that. But before we get into the meat of the show, it's time for our preliminaries. So it is now time for our Urban Dictionary word or phrase of the week.
Do you understand the words that are coming out of my mouth?
Man,
definition?
What does skeet skeet mean?
What's on fleek?
Can you use it in a sentence?
Poppin' on fleek, you lit?
And it's gonna be lit.
Major key!
It's time for the Urban Dictionary Word or Phrase of the Week.
So this week's Urban Dictionary word or phrase of the week is nevuary. Nevuary, the date used for something that will never happen. I'll be sure to get that report done by nevuary. I don't know. I know it's cheesy. It's a regular term, but I feel like I was just thinking about, I was talking to one of my girlfriends about work. As always, work and, you know, what's going on with work and, you know, the unrealistic demand sometimes, not just at my job, but in general, especially as Black people, you know, we have this like, I don't know, maybe not everybody has it, but for me, I kind of have this like compass. I don't know what type of compass it is, but when things kind of don't make sense, when things are a little like, you know, my initial reaction is kind of like resistance, right? So so when I saw this definition, nevuary, I'm like, this is so appropriate for many people, you know, when they are asked for these unrealistic things and they are placed in these situations, they're asked these like crazy ass questions, they have these demands that are put on them. That nevuary would be a great response, right? I don't know if you'll have your job after making such a response, but I feel like there are certain scenarios that this might, you know, be appropriate. Now, this example, I'll be sure to get that report done by nevuary. I feel like this is work related. And again, I feel like many of us, most of us are not in a position to give such a remark. But I think with our friends and family, I think this is a safe word. But I don't know. There was something about it. I was like, nevuary. I was like, all right. I feel like, you know, maybe in the dating world, right? If somebody asks you out or if somebody, you know, says something crazy or makes a crazy request, you could say, yeah, you know, I'll hang out with you, nevuary. I don't know. Now that I'm saying it, though, it kind of sounds cheesy. Maybe this is not for our generation. I don't know. But either way, that is the Urban Dictionary phrase. Word or phrase of the week. So now we are up to my most favorite section of the show. It is now time for the big up of the week.
Watch it. And you feel big up, big up. All of the woman them big up, big up. All of the girl them big up, big up. All of the woman them big up, big up. What?
So this week's big up of the week goes to Edwige Dantica. So Edwige Dantica is an amazing, amazing author. I grew up reading her books. And of course, as a Haitian American and her being Haitian, it was only right, right? But either way, Edwige Dantica is no stranger to winning awards and to receiving accolades for her work. But this year, she received the 2020 Vilcek Prize in Literature, and it was awarded to her for her dazzling prose and profound understanding of our shared human condition embodied through her genre-spanning work that explores the Haitian diaspora and other personal narratives. So the Vilcek Foundation's mission is raising awareness of immigrant contributions and fostering appreciation of the arts and sciences. So I definitely want to big up Edwige Dantica. And I believe that I bigged her up like early on in the According to RP history for another accolade that she had received. But it's really important that we still have these types of storytellers within our communities, within our groups, because I feel like, you know, storytelling is dying, right? We don't have, like, when I go back and to look at, like, you know, who do I have to carry on the traditions? Who do I, you know, who within my group, right? My generation is still a storyteller, can still share the information, can still share the stories, can still share the experiences of our ancestors. We don't have a lot of those anymore, to be honest. And I feel like it's really, really, really sad. It's a really sad state to be in, because I feel like our history, especially as Black people, you know, the Caribbean people, it's a very rich history. And I'm looking at like my son who's growing up, and it's really incumbent on me to pass down whatever knowledge I know that I received from my grandmother and whatnot. But I just find that, you know, like they're missing out. Like, where are our stories? Where are the storytellers of, like, I guess my generation, like my age group, right? That are now having kids. And, you know, we have this individual, we have these groups of people who can now pass this information down to our children that can talk about the experiences of our people in the Caribbean and in Africa. I find that I don't know too many Edwige Danticas, to be very honest. I've only really known about her through my, you know, in my generation coming up reading books. I don't know too many Edwige Danticas. And obviously, you know, time is going on, people are getting older, and it's like, who's going to be the next Edwige Dantica to really continue on the legacy, right? And to continue on the storytelling. So I definitely appreciate all that she's still doing, just trying to really, you know, hone on the human condition and really talk about the experiences of the people from the diaspora, particularly Haitian people. So kudos to you and big up to you. So with every high, there is always a low, unfortunately. And this week's low comes from TheRoot.com again, because, it, you know, like I said, this week, they were on and popping. Not that they're not always on and popping, but I was able to get both my womp womp and my big up of the week from TheRoot.com. But basically, there's a story out there of two UConn students who are arguing their First Amendment right to say the N-word, right? And I know some of you guys are probably like, this is crazy. Like, why is this even a thing? But they're claiming that they have a First Amendment right to use the N-word. And so basically, this is how the story goes. These two individuals, Jared Corral and Ryan Murkaj, it looks like, two students at the University of Connecticut, were arrested for repeatedly yelling racial slurs while walking through a parking lot on campus. A black student recorded the video of the incident and put it on social media. The students were then arrested as a result of a Connecticut law that makes it a misdemeanor if someone ridicules or holds up to contempt any person or class of persons on the account of creed, religion, color, denomination, nationality, or race of such person or class of persons. So these arrests of the two students prompted lawmakers to review the law for its constitutionality. So basically, you know, these two kids were arrested for using the N-word. And instead of, I don't know, really looking into it in terms of, I guess, a disciplinary manner with the school, it looks like lawmakers have decided to take it upon themselves to, these white boys might have a point here. So let's review the law for its constitutionality. Let's see if it's okay to allow these white people to say the N-word. I mean, that's my interpretation of it. It might be a different interpretation from you. So basically, many are saying that the law should be taken off the books because it violates, I guess, the First Amendment rights that's guaranteed to each and every individual. But then there are many who are saying that, you know, because there is an increase in white nationalism, as we all have seen through the Trump the Trump administration. Even saying his name just has me, you know, crazy, right? Through the Trump administration, you know, this can definitely become like a threat, right? Allowing people to basically engage in this type of behavior of calling people the N-words and escalating it to physical assault and whatnot. Things, again, that we have seen, especially in this recent presidency. So these two kids apparently also filed federal lawsuits saying that the school is punishing them for violating their free rights of speech. And so here's the thing, right? The Constitution is the Constitution. There is a right to free speech, right? But I guess the real question is, if this were some Jewish people and these white boys were yelling out, you know, anti-Semitic slurs, they were you know, yelling all sorts of like, you know, Nazi chants that they picked up from, you know, some books. They were reading out passages of Mein Kampf from Hitler. I'm wondering if there would have been a review of the constitutionality, right? If lawmakers in Connecticut would say, hey, let's go back to the drawing board on this law and see whether or not it measures up to the U.S. Constitution. Do we need to throw this law out? Is it now archaic? Is it actually in violation of the Constitution? Should we allow these white Nazi skinheads, people from the Aryan race, to yell out anti-Semitic slurs in a parking lot? I don't think that this is how it would go, to be very honest. I don't think it would go this route. I don't think there would be a review now to see whether or not these two white people, white boys, kids, I think they're like 20 years old, should be allowed to yell out the word nigger. I don't think so. I don't think that that's what would have happened. But either way, that's what Connecticut is doing. Connecticut is reviewing their laws to basically, you know, protect, I guess. I don't know. I guess it's a protection of whiteness, right? Let's review these laws to see. Maybe they can say nigger. Maybe they can say nigger. And if they do say nigger, we should not arrest them. There should not be any consequences. So I don't know what the school's going to do. It looks like the school had come out with a statement as well that seemed that it was more interested in protecting, I don't know. I mean, protecting themselves, yeah, but it didn't seem like their statement was really about, wow, this is crazy. We need to really, like, you know, buckle up. We need to really, you know, I don't know, do something to keep the order here. We have black students here too. We cannot allow this. It seems like it was more like, you know, there was a noise disruption. They were disruptive, like disorderly conduct. They were too loud, and let's get them for that because we have rules against being too loud and yelling in general in our parking lot. So it doesn't seem like their concern is really about the racial slurs, but more so about, oh, you were too loud. So it'll be very interesting to see how this lawsuit, you know, fares. Is there really going to be like a real, real case? Like, is there really going to be a decision as to whether or not saying the N-word is protected? I would like to see what happens, to be very honest. And I think I'm going to put this one in my notebook as one of the stories to follow for the rest of the year. But either way, that is our Womp Womp of the Week, and we are now on to the meat of the show. All right, everyone, I'm here with my very special guest, Jeff Lindor. Jeff, say hello.
Hey, how's it going, everyone? Jeff here, you know, looking forward to this podcast.
Well, hello, Jeff.
Yes, how's it going?
Well, Jeff, let the people know who you are exactly. What do you do? What are you known for?
So I'm someone out of God's own heart, you know, mercy. I love the Lord, and, I'm a founder of a company called the Gentleman's Factory, and it's a co-working social club built to enhance and connect black and brown men.
Okay. And this is based where exactly?
So we're based in New York City, Brooklyn particularly, but we're looking to expand all across the city, all across the country, all across planet Earth.
All right.
Yes. Yes.
So we are still in Black History Month. This is the last Sunday of Black History Month. Mm-hmm. And so I wanted to kind of dedicate this episode towards Black entrepreneurship, right? Black business. Mm-hmm. And so we've seen a huge push for Black entrepreneurship within the last, for me, I would say the last couple of years, really.
Yeah.
Everybody's opening a business. Everybody is starting an online site. Everybody's selling something. Like, everyone has been, I guess, bitten by this entrepreneurship bug. Mm-hmm. But what I wanted to kind of focus on is the fact that, yes, everybody is into this whole like Black entrepreneurship, buy black, everything black. But I feel like there's some sort of like, there's kind of like some pitfalls with this, right? Because at the end of the day, I feel like people are being pressured almost to like start something. Like, you know, if you're black and you don't have a side hustle or a side business, like, what are you doing? Right? And there's this idea that as black people,
the goal is to not work for the man. It's to work for yourself mm-hmm. and to work for your community, right? Mm-hmm. And so as an entrepreneur yourself, I guess, what is your opinion on this entrepreneurship boom within the Black community?
I think that it's, you know, fantastic. You know, like, I think it's amazing. And I think that if there is pressure for folks to get into the entrepreneurship world, then that's the best pressure that you should have, right? Because I think that, you know, we need to explore our creativity, mm-hmm. you know, and I was reading somewhere where they said that most businesses are sole proprietorships, you know, which is, I guess, you know, I mean, we need definitely more Black enterprises, et cetera. But, you know, just starting to get into the game, I think it's really important. And then you can only grow from there.
Okay. So what is your opinion on, I understand that you believe that Black entrepreneurship is important, right? And it's a good pressure to have.
Yeah.
But isn't there also the idea that not everyone's a businessman?
Yeah, absolutely. So, and they'll weed themselves out, right? Because now there is that pressure of, you say that you start a business and everyone in your community rallies for you initially, mm-hmm. and then they'll, you know, buy your first product. But after a while, if your product isn't good, the market will tell you, right? So I think the market dictates the viability of the business, because if you're not making money and if you're not having traction, then you'll eventually just bow out because you just can't afford to do it anymore, you know? So you'll see through time, for those who would, you know, eventually get out of the entrepreneurship game, and or if you're a true entrepreneur, then you'll fail and get back to, you know, and then get back doing it again, because entrepreneurship is all about solving a problem.
Okay. I guess my issue with that, I guess, is there a way then for somebody who's wanting to get into the entrepreneurship realm to kind of figure that out before spending all sorts of money mm-hmm. to try to get into a business that they can't scale and that will probably fail? Or again, a lot of people have this idea that, you know, it's easy to become an entrepreneur. It's easy to just set up a store on Shopify and I can sell shea butters and all this other stuff, right?
Yeah,
everybody has a shea butter shop,
mm-hmm.
A candle shop and whatnot. Is there a way to, or what, is there a way, or do you know of any ways that people can kind of like test this entrepreneurial spirit out
mm-hmm.
before going in and investing in, you know, starting an LLC, you know, and all the startup costs that comes with being a business? Because I do agree that, you know, I guess if you have the idea, why not explore it? Mm-hmm. You know, why not test your creative side?
Yeah.
But if you're not, but again, just because you're creative doesn't mean you, again, can actually like mm-hmm. have a business, right? And actually start up a business. And so I think my fear is there are a lot of people who are out here, you know, spending their savings, like wiping out savings account, mm-hmm. wiping out 401ks even, you know, dipping into their children's college fund
yeah.
to start off a business because of an idea that they have. And they believe that all this is going to work. But then it fails after like 6 months, and then there goes their life savings, there goes their children's college funds.
Yeah.
You know, is there a way to kind of prevent that?
No, there isn't, right? Because everything is about risk, mm. you know, and if you don't take that risk, then you'll never know, mm-hmm. right? So, and it's also about what problem are you trying to solve? And even before then, you ask yourself, is this a hobby or is this an enterprise? Mm-hmm. So if you're trying to do a side hustle and, you know, take out your children's savings for a Shopify store, then
for shea butter,
then, you know, then you have to ask, what is the product that you're selling? So if you're just like white labeling something and just putting your brand onto it, then if you're wiping out your children's savings fund for that, then that is a little bit risky, you know? And then, you know, I also see a lot of people have this notion that if they think that they have, you know, like 10,000 followers on Instagram that that's a business model, right? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So, and I see that all the time, but that's not a business model, right? Social media is important because it brings awareness, but how do you convert that into sales, right? How do you convert that into money? So sometimes when I rent out the Gentleman's Factory to certain, you know, certain influencers and things of that sort, and they can't fill a room because they thought that because they had, you know, 10,000, 20,000 Instagram followers or something, that that would automatically convert, but it doesn't, right? So I think that it's really important that you have a business plan. But when I say business plan, I'm not talking about a 30-page mm-hmm. document. Just have a one-pager.
A roadmap, right?
Yeah, just this is what I'm looking to do. This is the milestones and the metrics that I'm trying to reach within the next 3 to 6 months. And after those 3 to 6 months, let me evaluate that to see where I go from there and then just continue growing, you know? So those are the really important things that you got to do. Have measurable goals. Evaluate it and scale from there.
And I think it's really important that you said that, because I think a lot of people fail to plan. So they say when you fail to plan, you plan to fail. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, the one thing that you said that stood out was, you know, what problem am I solving?
Yeah.
And so I don't think a lot of people really think about their business, or they don't see business as necessarily solving a problem. They're thinking, how am I going to get money? Like, yeah. What can I do to get money, as opposed to what can I do to solve a problem?
So let me tell you about this, right? So I think that a lot of people in our community has this notion of, so one of the words that I really do not like is support, right?
Mm-hmm.
because let me tell you why. I think support is really important, right? You know, so we do need to support each other, etc. But then I like the term value more, mm-hmm. right? So if someone has a product and that product isn't really that great, now I'll support you by buying one or maybe two products, right? But then if your product isn't good, then why am I continuing to support something that I will just never wear or never put on my skin or never? Mm-hmm. But now if you now have a product and or service that is really great, it's no longer support, it's value. And now I need your product or mm-hmm. service because it's adding value into my life, for which then now that is stronger because you're no longer selling. You're actually, people are coming to you because you're solving the problem that they need. You know, yeah. So those are the ways that we should look at it. And for which now, too, the community now has to, the Black community particularly has a responsibility to make sure that we are now looking for those products and services that are really good mm-hmm. so that we can now direct our dollars to them so that they can grow.
So I guess it's a combination of value and support, right?
Yeah.
Because when I'm thinking of, I saw something the other day where somebody on Instagram was reposting, I think it was like they make these soaps, right? These mm-hmm. very intricate soaps that are, you know, supposed to be really, really good for your body because they're made with essential oils and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And one person commented and was like, you know, I love these soaps, I buy them all the time. And another person commented, well, you know, I don't really get that much, you know, I guess in sales because the Black community is saying that, you know, my products cost too much, right? Mm. And so now we see a lot of people putting their love, right, into their products, and they're really trying to build their brand, and they have quality stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But then there's the issue of the pricing of it, right?
Mm-hmm.
So somebody might say, I'm not going to buy a $25 mm-hmm. bar of soap,
yeah.
right? And so although it's like you would love to support and you would love for this to mm-hmm. be, like, you know, you would love for it to create that value for you,
yeah.
then there's also the practical side, right, of things.
For which, then I think that the business owner needs to do market research to see what does the market, you know, what's the market value for mm-hmm. that, right? So if now a bar of soap is $25 and nobody anywhere is selling $25 bars of soap, mm-hmm. then that's a market failure, and that's no longer support. That is you trying to beat me over the head because you price your products wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if it is a really great product and when you look at the market and there are other soaps that are on a higher tier, but there is a market for that, then now that owner, that business owner needs to learn how to market to that particular crowd. And, you know, like another thing that I think that Black businesses has to realize too is that, you know, when you have a Black business, the owner is Black, but the world is still your playground, right? So yeah. You don't need to have a business that's just focusing specifically on Black people, right? Mm-hmm. You know, you can sell soap to anyone, right? You know, you can have food or a restaurant that's open to everyone, but it's still a Black owned restaurant, right? You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So this like exclusive or this exclusionary type of, you know, services, you need to know who your market is, right? So now, for example, with the Gentleman's Factory, you know, we you know, are open to everyone, but we provide, you know, content that's geared towards Black and brown men, mm-hmm. right? So as a result, all of our marketing is geared towards our target population. Yeah. That's our buyer persona. So every company needs to know who is it that you're selling your products to, right? You know, mm-hmm. So if you are selling,
the candle.
Candles, right? Candles. Everybody uses candles. So you shouldn't only be selling candles to Black people, right?
Yeah,
you
know and what I think saying? A lot, that's where a lot of people go wrong. Like, yeah. Like it's like sometimes, and I even experienced this early on with Freedom NYC with the accessories, that, you know, it's like, all right, you kind of want this for us, by us model because you feel like, all right, you're trying to solve a problem within your community. But then when it comes to the actual business side of things, you find yourself at a crossroads where it's like, like you said, anybody can wear these accessories. In fact, I'm losing money by only marketing and targeting and, you know, really just reaching out to Black women, right? Or Black
Well, but
women.
Then I would say this, though, right? So for every business, it's about the story. Mm-hmm. So now if the going back to the buyer persona, right? So who is your marketing to? Because sometimes if you don't have like a specific, you know, population, then mm-hmm. it's kind of hard to market because mm-hmm. when you're doing social media ads, you just can't put out an ad and put like $200, $300 on an ad mm-hmm. and say everyone in New York City,
yeah.
right? You know, because that because then it's just such a wide net and it's like, wait, who are you? Yeah, like you're not going to get anything. So you gotta, you know, be able to target it specifically, and that's how your website is looking. Like mm-hmm. who are you, who is your target? And maybe it not be a skin tone, but maybe it be a professional that is mid-level that's trying to make their way up to the C-suite, right? Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So maybe that's not a specific skin tone, but that's an income bracket, or that's a professional, you know, you are marketing to surgeons, mm-hmm. right? You know what I mean? You don't got to market yourself to Black surgeons. If you have a uniform or something like that, that's for police officers, right? You're only going to market it to Black police officers? No, that doesn't make any sense, mm-hmm. right? You know, so I think that as businesses, particularly Black businesses, and many of us know this, I mean, because Black people are just brilliant, you know what I'm saying? So, you know, like I'm definitely not speaking down to any of us, but it's just good to give us a refresher. So particularly for those who are starting businesses, to know that, you know, you should know who your target population is, you know?
Okay. How would you approach the topic of competition within the Black community, right? Because there's a lot of businesses that are similar. And a lot of times I find that people are hesitant to work with each other. People are hesitant to kind of even like, you know, go to certain spaces because they don't want other people to know that their business exists, because they yeah. feel like, you know, well, I need to be the Black, you know, company that, dealing that with
is,
this.
That is the craziest thing I've ever heard in my life, right? So in my industry, you know, I am rooting for all of the, someone sent me an article recently about like the Black co-working spaces that are opening up. And I'm like, oh, that is fantastic, because it also brings more awareness to what I'm doing, right? Mm-hmm. You know, because now the more articles that are being out there, I'm seeing that they're using the Gentleman's Factory as a reference point, right? But then also too, you know, lots of Black and brown folks are not aware that there are spaces that are being, you know, tailored to their experiences. Mm-hmm. So if someone may not like, you know, let's say if Rita comes up with a co-working social club for Black professionals, and if they don't like what you have to offer, then they can say, oh, you know what, maybe I could go to the Gentleman's Factory. And if they don't like the Gentleman's Factory, then they can say, oh, you know what, let me go to Frida's World Social Club that just opened up in Soho, right? Mm-hmm. These are the really, like, because you're expanding the market, right? So now the Gentleman's Factory will always be in the conversation because, you know, our community's awareness to these spaces are now heightened because of more of them opening up. So I love it. And then also too, like, this is business. So if your business is underperforming, the market is going to dictate the outcome, you know? Mm-hmm. So I think friendly competition is good, you know?
Okay. Yeah. I always go to that question because I find that, you know, there is a stereotype that, you know, Black people obviously don't like to work with each other, and that, you know, a competition is always like a big thing because somebody always has to be the person, the one. And so I was just very curious as to what your take was.
But then that's also how we've been conditioned. So we've been conditioned to think that we can only be one. Mm-hmm. And that happens in corporate America as well, right? You know, so in corporate America, I was speaking with someone recently and they were saying how, you know, the managers, you know, they were always afraid. The Black manager was always afraid of hiring other Black people because he didn't want the other, you know, like the folks above him thinking that he's hiring his own people. Mm-hmm. Right. So because, you know, him and
we all
HR,
know each other.
Yeah. Right. So
we all kinfolk.
Yeah. Right. So like there's just this notion of just no, like we can, there can only be one. Like there is this really great club in Atlanta that I'm rooting. I mean, I'm like, yo,
I think I know what you're talking about. I forgot the name. Something's the Gathering Spot.
Yeah. I mean,
I've been doing some research on them.
I'm like, yeah, I hope that they, and I know, I mean, like, these brothers are killing the game, right? So I'm rooting for them and I'm like, yo, like I am praying for their success because their success is my success, mm-hmm. right? And not only for the Gentleman's Factory, but just for just me seeing, you know, like another Black business raising $10 million, $50 million, $100 million in venture capital. So, I mean, so I'm, you know, very similar to Issa Rae where she says, I'm rooting for everyone Black. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? I'm rooting for everyone Black. That's doing good things though, right? I mean,
that's doing
for
the good things. That's not doing, you know, questionable things.
Yeah. Exactly. So
good and legal.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay. So what would you say is maybe the number one challenge that you have faced, you know, growing and starting a Black business?
So, I mean, so the challenge that I'm having now, and then you and I spoke about this offline, mm-hmm. is just where do I go from here, right? Mm-hmm. You know, so I've built the Gentleman's Factory, you know, and then there's a really great traction. And now, you know, like it's a really good problem to have. It's like, what does phase two, phase three, phase four, phase 10 look like? Mm-hmm. You know, and then, you know, we've been having lots of traction. We were on Yahoo Finance this month.
I did see that.
So like we've been having like lots of really great traction. So now it's like the world is watching and the expectation level of the Gentleman's Factory is extremely high, for which I'm definitely up for the challenge. But it's like, you know what, how do we like 10x this? You know mm-hmm. what I mean? So that's my challenge. But prior to that, it's always capital, right? You know, so it's like, how do you raise capital? How do you ask, you know, friends and family? And not only that, like we've been conditioned not to expose our vulnerabilities.
That is true.
Now, if we've been conditioned to not expose our vulnerabilities, especially Haitians, right? You know,
I do not ask for anything. It kills me to ask for anything. I'd rather like jump off the bridge.
Exactly. So we've been conditioned to really, you know, make sure that we don't show other people our vulnerabilities, mm-hmm. so we suffer inside. So me as an entrepreneur, I had to unlearn all of that and really come in to everyone humbly saying, listen, I don't know, or I'm in need, or can you help me with this? Or can you help me with that? You know, so I think that that's some of the problems that us as Black entrepreneurs may face is the ask mm-hmm. part, especially with our peers, because it's because many of us want to one up our peers.
And a lot of them think that we're doing much better than we are. So we don't want to be like, actually.
Yeah, right? Oh, trust me.
That Bentley was not
mine. Yeah. Trust
not
me.
Not making the six figures you think I make.
Yeah. I mean, that I know. I'm telling you, with the amount of
people think I'm rich. Think I'm rich because they see the podcast, the radio show, and they're like, yo, you doing like, yeah, I'm doing it for free. Free 99.
Yeah, it's like, trust me, I mean, even myself recently, you know, I was in this really powerful room with a whole bunch of like different executives and things of that sort, and then I was looking around and I was like, yo, I mean, I am blessed to be in this room, in this circle, and we had like some really powerful folks there, and I was like, Yo, I am the brokest person in this room. And I'm like, oh, wow, but they don't even know that, right? You know
it's
what I mean?
It's all about faking the funk, right?
They think I'm on their bank account level, right? You know, so.
Little do they know. Right.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, yeah. So, you know, fake it till you make it.
Right? Okay. Yeah. So I guess, how would you guide somebody in the ask, right? Because mm-hmm. I feel like we've identified that the ask is probably one of the biggest issues, mm-hmm. right? We're afraid to ask. There's a lot of vulnerability in asking. And mm-hmm. we also don't want to let our people know that we actually broke.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So how would you coach somebody into asking?
Well, first thing is you got to know what you're asking for. Mm. So if you don't have a roadmap, then, you know, why are we even here?
So it's the making sure that you're planning again.
So it's the planning, but it's also knowing the capacity of the individual that you're asking, right? So I remember one time, you know, there was someone who had reached out to me, and then they asked me for, I think, like $25,000, right?
Mercy.
And then I was looking at them and I was like, yo, you know what? You really thought I had $25,000. I was like, oh,
Instagram is a liar.
Yeah, right? You know, so now it's knowing what that person's capacity level is, mm-hmm. you know, and then you'll never really know, but, you know, it's good to kind of just
ballpark it a little bit,
right? And then maybe it not even be money, but maybe it be, you know, so even recently someone, you know, who's not even a member at the Gentleman's Factory.
But you need to get your membership right.
And then they asked me to introduce them to someone who was really like powerful, like one of my like celebrity friends. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, and then I was dancing around it, you know what I mean? But so you know, like I'm saying that you got to know what the capacity of the individual is so that you know what to ask for. Mm-hmm. And so it's two things: knowing what to ask for, what is it that you need, and building a relationship and a rapport with the person so that it's not a transactional kind of relationship, but it's more of a organic bonding experience for both of you.
So I guess to touch on that a little bit, this organic relationship, right? So a lot of times people feel like because they have the ask in mind, mm-hmm. that it's not necessarily genuine, right? I guess on their part. And I feel like sometimes that is what keeps a lot of us out of rooms, because especially for me, for example, right? In my mind is just like, man, I'm not a schmoozer. I'm not somebody who's gonna, like, I know that I'm coming to you. Like when I hit you up with that, hey, you know, mm-hmm. wanna grab coffee next week, because mm-hmm. I know in a month I'm gonna ask you for something. For me, I feel like this is some premeditation mm-hmm. going on here, and I just don't feel comfortable. And so a lot of people, I thought it was just me, but a lot of people kind of have that same mentality. Like, I'm not that type of person to like do this whole setup thing. Like, it's uncomfortable.
But those are skills that needs to be developed, right? Mm-hmm. The soft skills need to be developed, because you need to cultivate that relationship. Because if you are, and even at work, right? So like, let's say if you're looking for a mentor or a sponsor mm-hmm. or things of that sort, but if it's very transactional, then they'll treat it transactional too, mm-hmm. right? But if you now develop a real relationship, mm-hmm. humbly saying, listen, you know, Rita, listen, I just passed the bar and I'm figuring this out. Would you be able to mentor me, or would you be able to introduce me to yes, such and such and such and such, but also to Rita, what do you need? Mm-hmm. Right. So it is a reciprocity is extremely important, right? Because like when I hear stories of, executives who are really successful, they always say, hey man, you know what, like, you know, someone even recently told me that who I had drinks with recently, they were saying how the way that I got into the VC world, the venture capital world, is I would volunteer for pitch competitions, and even after I got my MBA from NYU Stern, I was going around like setting up the chairs, setting up the tables, you know what I mean, and really just putting in the water for the speakers. I just needed to be a part of the room, right? You know, so it's those things that you need. And that's also because like people also want to know, you know, are you serious? Mm-hmm. You know, can I put my name behind you? And are you ready for that too? Mm-hmm. You know, certain people aren't ready for a email forward from me because and I'm blessed to be in a position where individuals respond to my text messages or my phone calls or even my email forwards, but I can't do an email invitation to certain people because they're just not ready for what that comes with, you know?
And I think that that's important to differentiate and to distinguish because, so for me, the issue is not necessarily like volunteering and being in a, I guess, a reciprocal type of relationship. Mm-hmm. But again, I think what I'm trying to really get at is just that first step, right? Mm-hmm. How do you necessarily move forward without thinking, with I guess turning off that, you know, you're gaming somebody, right?
Yeah.
Because the genuine relationship is going to, foster regardless, mm-hmm. right? But a lot of times people have a problem going into situations knowing that it's really to get something, mm-hmm. right? Because you don't know that person. You don't know if you're, what that relationship is going to be like when you first reached out. You first reached out because you needed something. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes people have the problem feeling like, man, I don't want to feel like I'm using mm-hmm. somebody to get to where I need to get.
And then the way that you solve that is when you're asking or when you're speaking to that person, you also ask them, hey, how could I mm-hmm. add value to you? Mm-hmm. Right. You know, and that's really important because if it's just take, then it's like, all right, like, I'm not a bank. Mm-hmm. I'm not a, I'm not a genie, right? You know what I mean? And you're not Aladdin, right? You know what I'm saying? So
great analogies, Jeff. Right,
you know what I mean? So now it's like, what are you? And also, like, they want to know what credibility do you have with me that I'll put my credibility on the line for you? That's where the relationship piece comes in, and it's always reciprocity. And then oftentimes, like, you can't really offer much to that person who's your senior, mm-hmm. but even asking that, they did now know that, you are someone who understands, or someone who's humble, you know what mm-hmm. I mean? And then someone who's not very transactional, mm-hmm. you know what I'm saying?
So I think then the answer, I guess, to all of that is just changing the mindset from the onset. Mm-hmm. Because again, I think that for most individuals, they don't have a problem with the reciprocity of the relationship, meaning mm-hmm. being genuine and going in and saying, hey, how can I help you? I don't think that for a lot of people, that's the actual problem. It's mm-hmm. that beginning step. How do I move past this, man, I'm about to go ask for this thing and I feel like I'm kind of like, jipping
it's
the system.
It's the unwiring. Mm-hmm. So it's the mindset. Because if you think that, then your approach would be that mm-hmm. and it won't be real because we'll look at you like, hey, you know what? You're really just trying to transactionalize mm-hmm. me. And I don't even think transactionalize is a
it
word.
It might not be a word, but Urban Dictionary would be allowing sorts of stuff. That might be next week's word.
Absolutely.
But yeah, no, and I think that makes a lot of sense. And I think that, though, that's why a lot of people end up staying out of the game in general because they're like, I don't want to come off as this transactional person. And I also don't want to feel like I'm like, you know, really like jipping somebody.
The
so.
Way that the world works, and there's this, we've been taught that if you work hard, if you go to school, if you get degrees, then everything will be great, right? You know, and that's not the case, right? So that is, so the way that folks really advance is absolutely one, being qualified. So a lot of people went to college and a lot of people have fancy degrees and, you know, all of that stuff, right? Mm-hmm. But the differentiating factor is who is introducing you, who is, you know, your sponsor, who is your mentor, who is giving you that email introduction. And that's true in corporate America, but that's also true in business. Mm-hmm. So if now someone gets, so if I get an email forward from, you know, yeah, like if I get an email from one of my mentors, mm-hmm. I am stopping everything and I'm responding to that email because I know the weight that that email carries, right? You know, so if you don't have someone that is on your corner, especially when you're, you know, just starting out, then it's going to be a challenge for you to really move forward because you just can't do this by yourself.
Okay. So I guess to wrap things up, what would be a hard skill that you think that people of color, black and brown people are, I guess, are lacking when it comes to this whole entrepreneurship world? Mm-hmm. And what is a soft skill that you think that we really, you know, need to work on that is, I guess, not necessarily visible and present in many of us who are actively in this game?
Right. Well, I think, again, black people are just the most brilliant people.
They are, but we got to get down to the nitty gritty, right? Though. I mean, we can praise all we want, but we have to also address the faults.
We are the most talented.
We have to address the faults.
Amazing, right? But with that being said, some of us may need to work on, you know, and that's a hard generalization because there's so many people that have so many different skill sets.
But more so what you've seen, because in your position being, you know, head of the factory, right? You encounter a lot of different personalities.
Yeah, sure.
And a lot of these men are, you know, on the route of entrepreneurship.
Yeah.
So from your lens, what do you find to be the hard skill that most people that you've encountered are missing and a soft skill?
So I would say, I don't know if this is a hard skill. This is probably a soft skill, but maybe just like combining it both.
Is a medium skill.
Okay, so what I would say is a medium skill is communication, right?
Okay.
You know what I mean? And communication in terms of what do you do? What do you do? And tell me that in 15 seconds or less.
So the elevator pitch type thing.
It's the elevator pitch, but not only with the elevator pitch, just knowing what do you do. So if I give you 2 minutes, 3 minutes, 5 minutes, if I walk away from a conversation and I still don't know what you do, like,
that's,
you know,
a problem.
The last thing, the worst thing that, you know, like the things that I laugh about, which is, you know, I shouldn't even be laughing, is when I ask someone, hey, like, you know, tell me about yourself. What do you do? And then they hit me with the eye. Boom. Listen, right?
Eye boom.
Yo, eye boom needs to be out of
it needs to be taken out of our vocabulary, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Keep that for your peeps in the streets.
Yeah. So I think that it's being able to effectively communicate what is it that you do, why do you do it, and how do you do it? You know what I mean? And that's probably more of a soft skill. You know, hard skills is hard, no pun intended, because, you know, like that's by like trade, you know what I mean?
True.
And then that's by industry. But I would say, generally speaking, it's the communication route. What do you do? How do you do it? Why do you do it? Right. You know, and telling that story so that when there's an emotional connection between for you and your consumer or whomever it is that you're trying to pitch to. But then also so that now folks can know that folks could associate you with that industry. So when they're in other rooms, they can say, oh, yeah, you know what? I know a really great accountant that focuses on businesses that have raised Series A round of funding. So that's very specific. I'm an accountant, but I focus on companies that raise Series A funding, right? So if you can say that in 15 seconds, you listen,
I got an accounting firm, but I'm really focusing on businesses that raised Series A round of funding. If you know any, please let me know. Here's my card. Boom. So now, something that's
we said we were going to take the boom out.
Oh, yeah.
See, that's why people say a boom. But because it's Black History Month, though, right? No,
so I only use boom in February, right? You know what I'm saying? Right?
I'm going to catch you in March.
Right. You know, boom. Listen, right? This is what I do, right? You know, but something very clear and direct so that you're able to articulate what you do clearly without the namin or without the
let me tell you right, about boom. That namin.
Yo, right? You know, so like there's so many fillers that we use because we can't articulate what we do effectively.
It's
you know?
True. Yeah. I think yes, I forgot about namin.
The namin's gotta go.
Namin's gotta
yo,
go.
For real. Right,
boom's yo. Gotta go. Yo, check it's gotta go.
Yep. All right, check it. Yep. Yeah, right? You know? Yeah, all of that.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
All right. So I thought this was a really great conversation.
Yes.
And then I'm really happy that you were here to talk about it because I feel like, again, we're in this era where everybody is starting a business. Mm-hmm. And I feel like there's still a lack of like education within the community as to what being an entrepreneur is, what supporting Black business means. Like you said, it's not just about support, but it's about, you know, what's the value.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then I think, you know, what you said not too long ago about having a story. I think a lot of times people rely on just the product and they're like, well, my product is good, mm-hmm. you know, because people said it was good or I know it's good, it's handmade, it's whatever the case is, but they don't necessarily focus on what their actual story is because mm-hmm. as you said, people are really tied into the story.
Yep.
They want to know, like, you know, what happened here? How did this mm-hmm. come about? Mm-hmm. What motivated you to, you know, to do this, right?
Absolutely.
And so I think that, you know, it's great to pour into the actual, I guess, mechanics of the business, but I think making sure that you spend time focusing on what you're actually, what's your actual story is important as well, too.
Yep.
All
absolutely.
Right.
It's the why. And that's why with the Gentleman's Factory, we're looking to focus a lot more on business development.
Mm-hmm.
So for the men listening, do know that the Gentleman's Factory is a resource for you to take your business to the next level. All right, boom. You want to know how we do it, right?
And
right,
for
boom,
the women listening who have men in their lives, who need this type of, you know, support and developing, also bring them down to the Gentleman's Factory.
Yes,
we just got done with Valentine's Day. Yes, you know what I'm saying?
Yes,
Black love is still in the air.
Yes,
so, you know,
absolutely.
The women are out here checking for their men too. You know what I mean? It's that reciprocity, right?
Yes.
But thank you so much, Jeff, for taking the time and blessing the mic on According to RP.
No, I mean, thank you for having me. This was absolutely fantastic.
It was a long time coming.
Yes. Oh, man.
It was a long time coming.
Amazing.
All right, everyone. So thank you for tuning in to another episode of According to RP on WJMS Radio. It's your girl, Rita Pierre, your host. And as always, I will talk to you guys next week.
You were listening to According to RP on WJMS Radio.
About time you tuned in.
Tune in each and every Sunday.
I can't wait to come back.
7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
It's all online.
WJMS.